The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Hello and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. I'm Dan Thomas. Later on in the show, Jules and Ali here to reflect another good performance from Barcelona. Plus, Shaka and Craig here to talk FA Cup. We'll start though with the biggest game, no doubt about it, in Europe today. Leipzig taking on Borussia Dortmund. So much excitement around this game, but it was terrible in the first half. But boy, Dortmund would come flying out after the break. And what a beautiful opener this is. Erling Haaland with some great work on the far side. Plays into Royce. Now look at this touch from Royce. Filthy. And then Jadon Sancho getting his second goal in as many games. Nice finish at the near post. Haaland then with the opportunity to make it 2-0. Through one-on-one with a goalkeeper. Just gets, I think, a fingertip to that to make sure it hits the crossbar. Dortmund, though, in complete control. Leipzig with a rare foire, though, into the Dortmund half. Dani Olmo with the opportunity, hits the inside of the post. And then moments later, Dortmund make it 2-0 in such brilliant fashion. Take a look at this build-up from everyone, basically. Haaland plays it into Jadon Sancho. Sancho plays it in to Royce, comes back from Royce to Sancho. Erling Haaland with the header to make it 2-0. What a goal that is. A little more direct, Dortmund's third. Royce just playing it straight through to Haaland, times his run to perfection. And cool and calm in front of the goalkeeper. Leipzig would get a consolation goal late on in this one. Another Norwegian, Solov, with his first for Leipzig domestically. But Borussia Dortmund thoroughly deserving of the victory. Archer in touch spoke to Gio Reyna after the game.
Gio Reyna. First half for Dortmund, it was a little bit difficult. But then after the break, wow, what a performance. How would you sum it up?
Yeah, the first half, you got to give credit to them. They're obviously a very good team. And yeah, they played well in the first half. And we were a little bit lost. We weren't sure where to go. We weren't sure where to be. So yeah, in the second half, we knew we had to bring more energy. We knew we had to counter and get chances any way possible. And yeah, we did it well. And yeah, we're going home with 3 points, which is the most important thing.
What did Edin Terzic say to the team at halftime?
We just need to bring the energy, and yeah, when we get the ball, we have to go. We're a little bit too complacent and a little bit slow with the ball in the first half when we picked it up. So yeah, we had to look for me, Erling, and Jaden, and Marco, and the guys going forward in the second half. And then yeah, chances came, and we put away some goals.
And what was he saying to you during the first half as well? It seemed like he was giving you some specific instructions.
Yeah, it was more just tactically on where to run on the pressing, but yeah, that's really it.
Talk to me about your teammate, Erling Haaland. I'm not sure about what's going on with this celebration. Maybe you can explain that, these wings that he was doing. But what can you say about him and the way that he's come back after this injury?
I didn't even see the celebration, to be honest. I don't know what you're talking about. But yeah, I mean, obviously, he has a crazy amount of goals since he's been here. So it's no surprise that he scored two more tonight. And yeah, it's great to have him back. And I think you can see from the team, it's a new dynamic and makes us a little bit more unpredictable with him in the field. And yeah, hopefully he can keep on going and scoring many more for us in the future.
Two final quick questions. You're approaching a year at Borussia Dortmund now. How do you sum up your development? A year in the first team, I meant.
Anyway. Yeah. It's a tough question to answer right now. Obviously it's been so amazing so far. I'm so happy to be here with the first team, and obviously I've developed a lot so far. And yeah, now I just want to keep on improving and work with the team and keep winning and yeah, creating and playing well and yeah, playing for the team and helping in any way possible.
So Borussia Dortmund now 5 points off Bayern Munich at the top of the table. Leipzig remains second. It was without doubt on paper the best game of the weekend in Europe, and it lived up to expectations eventually, as we welcome in Stuart Robson and Jürgen Klinsmann. Jürgen, the reason I say eventually, first half, nothing happened in this match whatsoever, but then it exploded, didn't it, into life after the break?
Yeah, first half we saw
was a lot of one-against-one battles. It was very physical. Nobody gave each other space. Still, it was high tempo. It was high intensity. And towards the end of the first half, I think, but you could see that Dortmund got better and better into the game. And then it all came through in the second half. I think one major point was that Giovanni Reina switched side with Jadon Sancho. And it opened up a little bit those one-against-one battles on the wings. And obviously Haaland then put his stamp on the game. I mean, not only he scored two beautiful goals, but he kind of really fought the whole defensive line of Leipzig himself. And it was very, very impressive. So this is a big win for Borussia Dortmund. It's great for the Bundesliga, obviously. The race is on now at Bayern Munich. But it was an impressive second half from Borussia Dortmund. A very, very good performance.
Led, as Jürgen said, Robbo, by Haaland kind of finding that next gear.
Yeah, because in the first half, I thought Dortmund struggled to get it from back to front. I think he only had four touches in the first half. But what he gave Dortmund, which Leipzig didn't have, was somebody who was willing to run in behind. Yes, he linked up the play, played a lovely little couple of little 1-2s, but he was willing to run in behind, as we saw for the third goal. And he's got that pace to run in behind. But we also saw that when crosses come into the box, being as tall as he is, and he's a good leaper as well, that he's got aerial quality. It was a great second-half performance from him and a good second-half performance from Borussia Dortmund. And I thought the change happened when Emre Can came on and started to dominate midfield. I think that was a big plus for them.
Haaland is a bit special, isn't he, Jürgen?
No, very special, because obviously he can finish things up by himself, but also he can put other people into a good place as well, and he can do assists. And you could see, I mean, the way it worked out then in the second half with Giovanni Reina on the right side, and Sancho came in more from the left. And the partnership with Marco Reus is a special partnership that he has in place there. So these four players for Borussia Dortmund, if they kind of get into a role, if they pick up speed and they combine, then they are very, very damaging.
Jürgen, how would you ideally see the timeline for Erling Haaland? Because this summer, he's going to be linked to every big club, because obviously he's having another sensational season. Would you advise him to stay for another year? Or you always say, if you need to leave a club to go and win trophies, that's what he needs to do?
Well, I think they have the hope in Dortmund to win trophies as well. I mean, they're a very ambitious club. It's a big club, obviously, in a very difficult period with COVID. He's growing, it seems like, from month to month. He's getting stronger. He's becomes more a man. He's maturing. So he's a very special player. I think there's no hurry for him now looking for a change. I mean, he's comfortable there. He has a blind understanding with, as I just mentioned, with Reina, Sancho, and especially with Marco Reus there. There's, I think, no need right now. Eventually, if he continues like that, big clubs will knock at his door. There's no doubt about it. I mean, Dortmund is a big club, but financially, there will be some offers coming along. But I would take some time if I were him.
Robert, you watch a lot of football all around the world. Is it a stretch to say he is one of the best players in the world?
Absolutely, he's one of the best players in the world, because he can do anything you want from a centre forward. We saw it today. Didn't get involved much in the first half, but he was still trying to make runs in behind. He threatened the back of defenders. He timed his runs to perfection. He's not a player that keeps running offside. He's good in the air. His link-up play was good. For a couple of the goals, he set up the play. He knew exactly, he was aware of the space that other players were in. So I think he's an outstanding player, and I think he is one of the best players in the world. Not just one of the best strikers in the world, one of the best players in the world, and he will be for years to come. And I think Jürgen's absolutely right. I think he should stay at Dortmund for maybe another season and a half, and then go to one of the very big boys.
Jürgen, Dortmund fans have seen this before. A great performance, and then it's followed by a mediocre performance or dropping stupid points. Was there anything you saw today that would indicate that we can see a little more consistency from that side, or is it a case that only time is going to tell?
I mean, times will tell, but I think it was a big step forward for Borussia Dortmund, because winning at Leipzig is a big deal, especially in the situation that they were on after changing the coach and a bit of a turmoil. But this was a very, very impressive win, and that should give them confidence and strength. I mean, we always, when we saw Dortmund having not such good games, then we talked about the lack of leadership. You know, then they were looking at Haaland, which is 20 years old. So, and we always said you shouldn't look at the youngsters, you know, for leadership. I think, you know, Mats Hummels really took a major role in this whole thing. You know, he stepped it up. You know, you can hear his voice. Obviously, because there are no fans in the stands, you can hear the voices of the players a little bit better and the coaches. But he was a real leader on the field. You know, he helped everybody out. Sometimes you even found him as the left winger in the first half at certain moments. So you need that leadership. As mentioned, you know, Emre Can played a terrific game when he came on then for Witzel, which we hope is not seriously injured. So it's down to them. I think it's down to that group of players. Many young players, obviously, but there are some experienced older players in that group that can make a huge difference in terms of leadership and get them on a chase at Bayern Munich.
We've seen mixed fortunes, haven't we, for Dortmund so far this season, in particular for Jadon Sancho, Robbo, who we talked about a lot, about moving to Manchester United. Obviously a move that never materialised. Clearly that had effect on his game, but he seems to have started the new year, the old Jadon Sancho, if you like.
Yeah, he got that confidence from the goal last week. I didn't think he had a particularly good first half. He made poor decisions on the ball. He had it nicked off him two or three times. But in the second half, he looked a much better player. He started to be arrogant on the ball when he was going past people. He picked out the right cross for Haaland to go into the far post. His finish, I thought, was excellent because most people, I think, would try and bend it into the other corner. But he saw Guelashi was not going to get across to that near post. So it was a very good finish from him. And as the game wore on, he looked a much better player. And he also played a couple of lovely little through balls for Royce when he made those little forward runs. So when he's playing with confidence, he's an exceptional player. He hasn't been playing with confidence in the first part of the season. He's going to get better and better over the course of the rest of the season.
Do you think all the Manchester United talk, you're going to affect him?
I mean, it affects every player in a certain way. When there are speculations, you're a young kid and you work your way up there through the system. And when you have a super run like he had with Dortmund and suddenly the attention of the big names is out there, it gets into your brain. It's just normal. You know, you're just a human being. And so there's a moment then maybe, you know, your performances slip a little bit. You don't have the same level of aggressiveness in your game and you wonder a little bit what happens in the future. But then you go through those stretches and that's very important to go through those phases. And then, you clear off your mind and you start kind of focusing back on what is really important, meaning what's happening on the pitch. And that's what he's doing, and he looks much, much better, much more alive. Today was a very, very good performance, and things will happen down the road, you know, automatically. When you play over a long distance of time, you're playing really well. Things happen anyway.
Jürgen, you mentioned the fact that the title race is well and truly on now, 5 points separating the top four. That off the back, obviously, of Borussia Mönchengladbach's 3-2 victory over Bayern Munich on Friday. And what was so interesting about this game, Jürgen, that it went very much against what we saw of the previous eight. Bayern going ahead, you thought, right, 2-0 up, they're home and hosed, they'll be fine. And Gladbach then getting themselves back into the game, not only getting themselves back into it, but winning it. How did it happen?
Yeah, I don't know how it happened, but it did, you know. So surprisingly, they went up and now 2 goals, you know. So they didn't need a wake-up call in that game to just, you know, turn things around. So it went the other way this time. I think it was a very, very good performance by Borussia Mönchengladbach. They were fighting, they were feisty, they were believing in themselves, and it shows a little bit that even, you know, big FC Bayern Munich is vulnerable at certain moments. If they are not turning it on, then 100%, you know, there is a chance to beat them. And it makes, obviously, the Bundesliga so much more interesting, so much more exciting. And now having 4 teams within 5 points is just awesome.
What's happened to Bayern, Robbo? I say what's happened to Bayern. God, they've only lost one last 10,000 games or whatever. But still, yeah. there was definitely frailties there, weren't there?
There certainly were. When there's no pressure on the ball and you're two centre halves trying to hold high positions up the field, you have to go with runners. You have to also see the danger. And Süle, for one of the goals, tried to play offside. He got his timing all wrong. And for the run from Hoffman in the first one, he comes from outside to in. Centre halves should see that. And they've got to just drop off and deal with it. And that's the problem that Bayern have. If they don't pressurise the ball in midfield, the two centre backs because they want to squeeze high up the field, can be exposed by runs in behind them. And that's what Borussia Mönchengladbach did very well in the second half of the game. They kept on making forward runs in between the two centre-halves and try and break that offside line. That's something that Hansi Flick has to just have another look at.
Yeah, this isn't really anything new, Jürgen. You take a look at the table and I think it's only five other sides have conceded more goals than Bayern have this campaign, which is something you don't associate with the defending champions, especially when they're Bayern Munich. What's the problem? Where has this vulnerability come from?
I think it's just a moment, kind of a lack of concentration or intensity that you go through it at certain stages in the season. You know, once things pick up again, once the European Cup comes into play again, they will switch gears, and that's what they are known for. So they don't, I mean, they're obviously angry at themselves, they're a second disappointed, but they will correct those mistakes and they will make sure that the other ones won't give them too much trouble.
Are they still the best team in Europe, Roy?
I think they are. I think when they're pressing the ball high up the field and the midfield players are closing the ball down, their back four can get high up the field and it's not a problem to them. But if they, as Jürgen said, if they just drop the tempo, they drop the intensity, drop the concentration, that's when they can be caused a problem. But I still think they're the best team in Europe.
So Bayern Munich then remain top of the table, 2 points clear of Leipzig. Meanwhile, Bayer Leverkusen can only manage a 1-1 draw against Werder Bremen, leaving them in third. Freiburg with a big victory, 5-0 over Köln. Meanwhile, Schalke with their first win in 31 Bundesliga matches with a 4-0 victory over Hoffenheim. And that win for Schalke amazingly lifts them off the bottom of the table above Mainz, who are just on 6 solitary points. Jürgen, let's start with Matthew Hoppe. What a great performance, what a time to get a hat-trick. And this is a player that you were saying you knew when he was much younger.
Well, it's a Southern Californian kid that came through a youth club here called Strikers FC in Irvine, Southern California, then went to the Barca Academy in Arizona. So he came through the American youth academy system, and then obviously Schalke picked him up, I think, a year and a half ago. And Schalke has one of the best academy systems in Germany. You know, it's not a coincidence that a lot of top talents in Germany come out of the Schalke production line. And seeing him there today scoring 3 goals in probably one of the most difficult moments of Schalke's history, and in the history of Schalke is more than 100 years old, is just incredible. I mean, this is a fairy tale story. You know, Matthew Hoppe is scoring 3 goals. And I think Schalke was by then now 31 games mm-hmm. without winning. And this is incredible. And it should make the kid super proud. It should make, you know, I mean, the youth system in America super proud. And obviously it's a big deal today at Schalke.
But the interesting thing is, it's maybe not as big a deal as it might have been a few years ago, because we're seeing this more and more, Jürgen. It seems everywhere we look over a weekend, there are young American players coming through and making an impact.
Yeah, and this is fantastic. I mean, it's fantastic to see that pipeline from the United States going into Europe, if it's coming out of the academy system, the youth clubs, or it comes out of MLS clubs. It's there now. The production is there, going overseas or staying here in the country. So there is so much talent now. And we often said that over the last 10, 15 years, you know, I mean, the under 17 national team, the under 20 national team, they always finish off in the final 8 of World Cups. So there is a tremendous amount of talent coming out of the United States, and now seeing them breaking through in big clubs in Europe, if it's Barcelona, if it's Weston McKennie at Juve, if it's Tyler Adams we saw today at Leipzig, or Giovanni Reina at Dortmund, and so on. Now we have a kid like Matthew Hoppe scoring 3 goals in a Bundesliga game. I mean, that's just fantastic, and it should give everybody a big smile.
Well, it certainly gave one player in particular a big smile, Weston McKennie, showing on social media. Of course, former Schalke player celebrating the fact that they finally registered a victory. This is a man who, of course, made that move to Juventus in the summer. And I don't think many would have expected him to have the playing time and the impact that he has. Of course, scored against Milan a few days ago. Jürgen, Just try and put into context that step up and how well he has made it.
Well, what Weston McKennie achieved in such a short period of time is just tremendous. It's outstanding, you know. And he's a young player that has the bite. A young player. He's outgoing. He's going there. He's going abroad. He's determined to learn the language, to adapt to a new culture, to make friends within the locker room and also outside, you know, the soccer environment, which is very, very important. So he was determined from day one on when he went overseas that he will he will make his way, and that's what he did. But don't forget, I mean, he was educated, he was formed at FC Dallas, and step by step he got more and more mature, and then when the moment came he took that chance. And he's fighting his way through, and so do many other ones, many other American kids. And this is just it's just a huge compliment for everybody that is close to those players.
No offense to Schalke, Robbo. We've seen people go from clubs like that to big clubs, like Juventus, and just go missing, just crumble, not be able to deal with the pressure. He seems to be loving it.
He certainly does. He started the very first game and he played as a holding midfield player and he played very well. Then he didn't play quite so well. And people said about his lack of creativity. Well, he's got back into the team and he showed great dynamism. He's a top midfield player. He can get up and down the field. He's made forward runs. He's scoring goals. He's versatile as well. And I think Pirlo's getting the best out of him because he's playing him on that on the right-hand side, a little bit further forward. He's making runs into the box in between the two strikers. When he came on against Milan, I was surprised he didn't actually start the game. He came on as a right wing back and then he moved to left wing back and that's where he scored his goal. So he's versatile as well. And he can show both sides of the game. He's good when they're in possession, but he's also good defensively. And he's added a lot of dynamism to that Juventus midfield. So it's been a great start for his Juventus career.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Just a reminder, Juventus against Sassuolo is our feature game tomorrow on ESPN Plus. Kicks off at 2:45, but be sure to join us in the studio at 2 o'clock for a comprehensive build-up to that match. Plus, we'll be looking back at some of the other matches, all available on ESPN Plus, especially that big tie early, 6:30, Roma against Inter Milan. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Third round action in the FA Cup today. Let's start, shall we, at Old Trafford. Manchester United with a 1-0 victory over Watford. McTominay's early goal enough to see United through to the fourth round. Shaka Hislop and Craig Burley with us to reflect on what we saw in England today.
Don't.
I haven't even said anything yet.
Well, I know, but I'll give you the answer to your question. What do you want me to say about this? That's, you know, what Man United are in the next round. You can't read anything into it. They were able to change the team. There's nothing that happened there in the FA Cup today. I'm going to tell you, oh, that was, you know, West Brom going out, but they've been terrible. Leicester, hey, here's a story. Leicester played their strongest team, I think. So maybe that's an intention of Brendan Rodgers. Maybe he thinks he can win it this year. But listen, there's nothing to say about Man United winning at home or any team like Liverpool or City, one of the big boys beating a championship side at home in the third round of the FA Cup behind closed doors. I'm sorry.
Craig does bring up a point behind closed doors, Shaka, obviously, in these sort of rounds and these sort of knockout competitions, the audience adds a lot to it. Is there a suggestion that maybe the FA should have addressed this and, I don't know, maybe let the bigger boys come in later in the tournament or just looked at maybe just scrapping it for this year?
I think the bigger boys would have been happy coming in later on every single year, not just this year, given the amount of football that the top players in the world currently play between club and international duty. So that maybe could have set the stage for what's to come. But in these early rounds, in all honesty, whether the crowd was there or not, I'm not sure that Manchester United against Watford in the third round is a spectacle that is worth discussing. And unless there's an upset, what's there to talk about? In the same way we spoke about Spurs and Liverpool and their respective victories, this is just like, okay, you won, you move on, let's move on.
I think that's a good point, Dan, that you know, the football in general is difficult to dissect currently unless it's a couple of the big teams going at it, or a relegation battle or something, unless you're a fan of a smaller club lower down in divisions. And look, I get the argument. There's been arguments for years now about replays and how this helps smaller clubs down the tiers to survive. But we're in an unprecedented time here. And I know we carry these competitions on our network, and they are good competitions. They're maybe not what they once were, but they're still good competitions, particularly when there's full houses, particularly when you get to the quarters, the semis, and then you get to Wembley. We have the Carabao Cup and we have the FA Cup. But I do believe in these circumstances that we all face around the globe, that these cup competitions should have been scrapped this year for 1 year only, and let the bread and butter of the Premier League get on with its job, because the COVID cases, as we know, in particular in the UK, have spiked so much in the last couple of weeks. It's incredible. I mean, it's dangerous. And then we have all these smaller clubs coming in and people travelling there, and the fixture congestion, we're all talking about it because Premier League games are now being postponed because players, not just players, but certainly high-profile players, have been breaking COVID rules. On top of that, people in general have been getting it. So the difficulty is in the schedule itself. And as difficult it is, because as you know, Shaq and I both have great fond memories of... well, have fond memories of the FA Cup, good and bad. But, I mean, if you get to your final and you lose or whatever, it doesn't matter. It's the memories are still there. So it's not easy to say that I think we could have been doing without this competition this year. But I really do. And, you know, I think the FA, in some sense, are not as draconian as they once were. But even today, for example, you know, we don't have the replays, but we still had extra time in a couple of games, at least a couple of games. The Arsenal game, which I know we'll talk about, did not go to penalties, but it might have done. The Burnley game went to penalties. Now, you know, we don't even need the extra 30 minutes. You know, at the very best, you say, look, at the very best, you say, we play the 90 minutes. If it's still level, we go to penalties. You have to do your utmost in these circumstances to have player welfare at the front of your at the front of your mind. So, yeah, I think that's what I would say. There will be lots of people would argue against me, and I get that. But I think it's an unprecedented time we're in, and to try and shoehorn these other competitions in, I think is pretty needless.
And of course, that's from the perspective... Go on, Shaq.
Sorry, I just think the challenge to that, Craig, is unless there's a suspension of football, like even the league for 3 or 4 weeks, it's hard to justify calling off the FA Cup in its entirety, because I think both cups are already slightly damaged from a damaged brand from when we played. And a lot of people look to Manchester United sending, I think they were still defending champions, I'm trying to remember what year, sending the team to the World Club Championships as opposed to defending their FA Cup title. As kind of the start of an unraveling of FA Cup, kind of how the esteem around the FA Cup. So if you have league football continuing, you know, a week, you know, every week as it were, and you suspended the FA Cup, my concern is that wonderful competition as we know it takes an even more meaningful hit, and I'm not sure it can afford that.
We saw, though, today, like a little glimpse of the magic, though, which obviously we bang on about when you're talking about the FA Cup. For example, Chorley Town getting the victory against Derby County, brilliant scenes of them all singing Adele. So as much from a big club's perspective, you can say, look, they need to rest. We need to postpone this tournament. For them, that's the biggest day of their professional lives, isn't it, Craig? You're taking that away from them.
Well, yeah, you're potentially taking it away for a year, and look, they might not get that draw again, albeit I think it was Derby's under 23s. I might be wrong.
Yeah, there was a COVID. It was very much a secondary team.
Yeah, but it's still obviously my old club Derby, still a name. It's still a club that's steeped in history with league wins and success in Europe, and albeit that was way back in the, I think, 70s or whatever it was. But yeah, you're absolutely right. And I've traveled, and Shaq and I have traveled to these smaller clubs, both in pre-season friendlies and in cup competitions, and we've seen what it means to these guys. You know, these guys who, you know, come up through the ranks the same as the rest of us, but don't quite make the grade at elite level football, and so they, you know, roll the sleeves up and try and earn themselves a living and put food on the table like most working people. And for them, it's a once in a lifetime, and I understand that. But we're talking about a pandemic here, and if we're talking about the UK in general, it is absolutely flaring its head in the UK like nobody's business again. And so it's not going away, particularly in that part of the world. So unless this rollout of the vaccine happens amazingly quickly in the next 3 to 4 weeks, we're going to see more games called off and more cases and more fixture postponements. And that's what I'm saying, eventually where the issue is going to come. Look, the league for all these clubs, including the likes of Chorley and others, no matter what level you're playing at, the league is your bread and butter, whether it be the fifth and sixth tier in England or the Premier League. And unfortunately, the cup competitions are going to have to get a backseat. I might be wrong. We might be able to squeeze them all in. I know the Carabao Cup final is much later than it normally is. The FA Cup final, we'll see if we even get there. We might not even finish the Premier League season. Who knows? It's all very much of an unknown at the moment. But I do think it is something that should have been thought about. Maybe it was. But the attempt to squeeze it in, I'm just worrying whether, with what's happening back in the United Kingdom, whether they're going to be able to do that.
Just last word on the FA Cup with you guys. Just what happened on the pitch. You mentioned Arsenal, Craig. Arsenal with a 2-0 win. Obviously, they had to get it done in extra time. Interesting use of VAR, because we saw Smith Rowe initially was sent off. That was reduced to a yellow. A lot of people saying, well, this is unfair. If you're going to have VAR for one game, you should have VAR for everyone. What would you say to them?
Well, I agree, but when you're in the FA Cup, then you're taking it to grounds that might not have the logistics to be able to have VAR, because not every, I think there's cameras at every game, but only a certain amount. But when you go lower down the ladder and there's maybe only two or three cameras there for a quick 1 minute replay, for whatever programme it is later that night, then they're not going to be able to use VAR because they won't be able to calibrate it. So, unfortunately, like everything else, it can only be for when there's the major broadcasters there. What I would say, though, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, people love to complain about decisions that are right, don't they? I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, here we have a bunch of people who whinge and moan about VAR when it's tight and it's dubious and it's the clear and obvious nonsense. And here we have a situation that I think most of us are in agreement that Chris Kavanagh, the referee, went over, and when he saw the challenge, it was a little high, but it wasn't reckless and it wasn't forceful. It was more of a flick. And here we have a decision that was correct. And what happens? Lo and behold, the naysayers are all out there moaning and whining about VAR again because, oh, they've all not got it. And it's terrible because it's right in this game, but we're not using it in the rest of the country. You just cannot please these people, can you? You know the one thing I got from this? I don't know if you saw the tweets, a tweet from Mesut Ozil, praising a young man playing in his position and playing it well in Smith Rowe that actually runs about. Maybe Smith Rowe should have tweeted back to Mesut Ozil and said, take a note from me, try running about for a change. Then maybe you'll get a game ahead of me. Instead of sitting in your arse on a sofa somewhere trying to get a transfer.
Drinking Turkish coffee, apparently, if you believe, or Turkish tea, with what he's been tweeted out. Shaka, just a word on VAR. Where do you stand on this? Should it be one for all or not at all?
No, I'm. If you're able to use VAR, you use it. Referees need help, and I think people prefer to have the right decision, if that means using VAR. So if it's at the Emirates or Old Trafford and VAR is available, use it. If the game is at Dagenham and Redbridge and VAR isn't available, then the referees call the game as they normally do when they go to Dagenham and Redbridge. I don't see why it should be denied in Old Trafford because it's not available in Dagenham and Redbridge.
Thank you very much.
Dan, I was going to let you go.
I was going to let you go once the NFL playoffs. I thought that was it. I was going to let you go, Craig. That's it. Go
watch but did he make that transfer or switched off?
Who?
Has he? Ozil.
No, he pictured him and his girlfriend or wife. They were drinking Turkish tea together and people were like, oh, he's going to Fenerbahce.
Yeah, well, that's what Listen, I've got a good point on Man United. I've got money to analyse their game against Watford.
Go and watch the playoffs. Thank you very much. FA Cup continues tomorrow. Likes of Chelsea, Manchester City and Spurs all in action. Be sure to join us on tomorrow's show. We'll be looking back at those games.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
The FA Cup may have lacked a little bit of sparkle so far, so we thought we'd take you back to 1995, Tottenham against Liverpool at Anfield. Jurgen Klinsmann scoring the winner to see Spurs book a place in the semi-final. Jurgen and Robbo back with me. What's striking when you take a look at the goal, Jurgen, is the celebration and the complete ecstasy from those on the bench, from the Spurs fans in attendance. It kind of brings you back to, I don't know, more of a day where you feel the FA Cup was more relevant.
Yeah, that was a bit extreme. I think, you know, obviously with the fans in the stands, it's a whole different game and we're all suffering COVID at the moment. But I mean, the experience I had in those years in England definitely were very, very meaningful in terms of the FA Cup is a religion for the English people is so important. Sometimes, I mean, at least at Tottenham, my days, it was almost more important than the championship. And then when it happens maybe by accident that you win, you know, a quarterfinal game at Liverpool and they haven't won for many years there at Anfield Road, then things are going a bit out of control.
But you can just see how much it means to you, to the fans, to your teammates as well. It's got to be one of your top goals for Spurs, isn't it, when you're looking back?
Yeah, not only it was a very special moment that we obviously won the game at Anfield, but what I never will forget at that situation, at that moment, was just the way the Liverpool fans basically honored us. So we went to our corner where a lot of Tottenham fans were, and we thanked them and applauded them. And I will never forget, I turned around and I thought, okay, the rest of the stadium is probably gone by now because we were out there for 10 minutes or something. But they weren't. The stadium was still packed. And then we turned around and we walked towards the locker room and the whole stadium stood up and gave us standing ovations. The Liverpool fans did that. And that's what kind of... I never experienced something like that before in my career, never ever afterwards, because it shows you the understanding of the English fans when an away team is maybe on that given day a little bit better and then comes away with a win. And they honored our performance, and there was something very unique in my time.
Robert, when you speak to anyone who's played of that generation, genuinely, they say it was on a par with the championship. Is that fair?
It was above the championship. I'll give an example. If we played Manchester United at home at Highbury in a league match, you'd get 35,000. In the FA Cup, you'd get 60,000. And my biggest memory and the biggest atmosphere that I played in was an FA Cup semi-final against Manchester United, played at Villa Park. There were 60,000 there. And when we arrived to the ground at 1:30, went out onto the pitch at 2:00, the ground was full. The atmosphere was unbelievable. It was meant to be a top class game. The pitches weren't particularly good. It was played on a bumpy pitch, but the atmosphere was incredible. It was really what everybody wanted to win. It meant, could we get to the final? Unfortunately, we lost the game 2-1. But it was what always sticks in my memory will be the atmosphere, both hostile and in terms of the just the noise that came out of the ground.
Gentlemen, as always, thank you very much. It's always good to take a stroll down memory lane. Thank you very much. Plenty of content over on our YouTube channel. Be sure to go over there and subscribe.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Plenty of action in La Liga today. Barcelona up to third after a convincing victory 4-0 away against Granada. Meanwhile, Real Madrid can only manage a goalless draw away against Osasuna. Atleti's match against Athletic Bilbao postponed because of snow in Spain. As anyone who's ever lived in Spain has sent me snow pictures today, yes, we know what snow looks like. Let's welcome into the show, shall we, Alan Renault and Julien Laurent. Boys, let's start, shall we, with a 4-0 victory away against Granada. Messi with a brace, Griezmann with a brace. Barca are going to win the league, Ali.
No, they're not. But, hey, Griezmann, Messi,
yep,
both scoring goals. Messi playing really well for the 65 minutes that he was on the field, which I also think is a big point that Ronald Koeman decided, you know what, it's 4-0, 65 minutes in. See you later, Messi. Come on and take a rest. And that is important for the future of Barcelona. We've always seen Messi, well, we're just going to leave him out there. Well, why? There's no need to. So he gets a rest. But more importantly, Griezmann, not only scoring goals, but the manner in which he did. The beautiful turn in the first goal. Yes, it comes off a deflection or a misclearance by Soldado, but the turn, the touch on the ball, how smooth he was in the turn, how confident he was, and how confident he was in the finish, you say to yourself, that right there is a world-class player, a world-class goal scorer. And that was confirmed by his second finish, in which on one fluid motion, brings it down with his left foot, finishes with the right foot, and it's all so beautiful to watch. And so therefore, you have to ask the question, why this doesn't happen more often and more consistently for Antoine Griezmann and Barcelona? Because the guy can score goals, and as much as we can say, well, you know, he's just not an out-and-out striker, when you see those sort of finishes, the way that he took those goals today, you have to ask the question, man, this guy has it in him. All he needs is to be in the right places, in the right moments, making the right sort of movements in the final third, and the service to be there, and there are goals to be scored by Antoine Griezmann. He can be the guy who can score the goals alongside Lionel Messi, at least based on today's game.
Go on then, Jules. Go on about Griezmann.
Yes! I never want anyone ever to tell me that Martin Braithwaite is a better option. Please. Please, we saw today there's an assist as well with the two goals. There's a lot of movement. He came from the left-hand side in the center quite a lot of plays in the half space. He was really good. I think Dembele being at that level helps. I think Messi being at that level helps, of course, when De Jong plays like this, when Pedri plays like this. Finally, in the 4-3-3 formation that we've been asking with Ali since the start of the season, things are getting into places. And we said on Wednesday night, after the win against Bilbao, we said they're baby steps. But right now, the steps are getting a little bit bigger because you can see the structure. You can see the position. They use the space really well. Their positioning is good. And it's not an easy place to go, Granada. They've lost only one game of the season before tonight against Barca. So I think well done. And clearly, they're on the right path.
Jules, I think you said before that you didn't think they were going to finish top four. Have you changed your mind now?
I can't remember saying that ever. Did I say this? No, I said I would be more amazed if United win the title. It was not something I said.
No, I'm pretty sure you said don't bother. That's it. Europa League is going to be their biggest hopes of the season. Ali, what's helped as well is that Messi seems to have found his range.
Yes, he has. And his level of activity has picked up. His confidence and trust in other players around him also has picked up. And there's a difference in the way that Lionel Messi is playing. And I think he recognizes the value of players like Pedri alongside him and a better version of Frankie de Jong, both players who are willing now to run into the 18-yard box to be attacking option, in particular Frankie de Jong, who today control the middle midfield alongside Sergio Busquets. But De Jong, his ability to run with the ball, to find passes going forward, to actually be an attacking option, also attracts attention away from Lionel Messi. And so when you have Messi with options around him and those guys are real threats, then he makes his job a lot easier. So as Antoine Griezmann runs with the ball, runs in somebody, draws attention, and lays the ball off to Lionel Messi, top of the 18-yard box, and he scores his first goal, then you say, exactly. It's not just Messi passing to himself. It's somebody else attracting attention away from Messi, and now Messi can pop in dangerous position. And when he does, he's going to score most of the chances that that people are able to create for him.
Meanwhile, Real Madrid can only imagine 0-0 draw away again, struggling. Osasuna, you kind of always feel, Jules, that Real Madrid have got this sort of result in them, especially when Benzema isn't in top form. If he struggles, you feel the rest of the team struggles. And that happened today.
Yes, you're right. I mean, the conditions were difficult. They were difficult for both sides, but I guess it's easier when you just defend like Osasuna did pretty much, although they had a really good chance in the first half on that corner. But with the snow, it was snowing and there was still snow on the pitch as well. It was a very icy pitch. But you're right, it's not an excuse. Toni Kroos said after the game on Spanish TV, this is not an excuse. The pitch is not an excuse. They didn't create enough. There was a lack of energy a lot in the first half. So it was a bit better in the second half, but it's just not good enough from a Real Madrid team. And I have to say, I don't understand Zidane's substitutions. Why taking Asensio so early when he was clearly one of the most creative players? Then Modric, Odegaard doesn't come on. Vinicius, when you need maybe a bit of pace and to try to do something a bit different, Vinicius doesn't come on either. And I just think tonight the team was off and Zidane was off as well with his choices.
And one of his choices, Ali, was to give Eden Hazard a rare start. Poof.
Proof is right.
Yeah.
A player who at his best with Chelsea was a guy who was dominant in 1v1 situations, in isolation. So today would have been the game in which, if indeed you had Eden Hazard at a high level, would have been ideal for him. Because indeed, it would be the player that could break somebody down and take somebody on. And in that short space, being able to beat somebody. And once you do that, then all of Osasuna has to shift over. And then it's when you can find the open space. Well, we don't see isolation from Eden Hazard. What we see from him is going into central positions and look to combine. And when he does that, tells me a couple of things. Either he has no confidence or doesn't quite trust his pace just yet to get past people out in wide areas. And it just makes it very comfortable to go and find the ball and just in little areas in which he's just going to get the ball one and two touches and lay the ball off. And then it also tells me that lack of confidence in his body, that inability to take players on, then forces him into areas in which he gets crowded. And when he gets crowded, then everything becomes very narrow for Real Madrid and very difficult to break any team down that sits behind the ball the way that Osasuna did. Credit to Osasuna, but Eden Hazard himself, again, was, well, far from what we have expected from him. But sadly, it is becoming more and more expected because of the performances that we continue to see from him every time he steps on the field.
Gentlemen, as always, thank you very much. And as always, just a reminder, you can download our daily podcast, which is available over on the website. In France, PSG taking on Brest. Pochettino's first game, I think, in charge at home. 60 minutes into this one. Moise Keane making it 1-0. 9 minutes remaining in the match. Mbappe, nice skill from him. He would eventually find Icardi to make it 2-0. Brilliant stuff there from the Frenchman on the far side. And then, moments later, Icardi, little flick in to Sarabia,
Mauricio Pochettino's getting his first victory as PSG coach, remaining second in the table, though now just 1 point adrift of Lyon, who could only manage a 2-2 draw against Rennes. In fact, both those Lyon goals coming late to get a point. Lille registering a victory, meaning that they are level on points with PSG on 39 apiece. Let's welcome back in, shall we? Julien Laurent is with us. Jules, a win for your boys. Woohoo!
Yeah, first one for Pochettino. His return at the Parc des Princes, even though with no fans, the ultras left a few banners there and there saying, you know, welcome back, captain, and things like that, because he was obviously as a player, PSG captain, 20 years ago. So good night overall, although they suffered at times, they struggled at times. Brest are a really good team. They play really attacking, flowing football. And I think they catch a lot of teams like that. And PSG certainly could have conceded one or two. In the end, it's a comfortable win, although Kylian Mbappe didn't score, but he was quite lively, created two goals, one especially. But yeah, good night, because Poch, I think that's a weight off his shoulders to have that first win after the draw at Saint-Etienne on Wednesday night. And then they can keep working. But we saw already a bit of what he wants them to do. He just needs to work on it now.
Julien Laurent, as always, thank you very much. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you to everyone who's been on. Stay tuned, though. Jules is back with us for Extra Time. More talk about PSG, plus Annie Moreno with us as well. Extra Time, then, is next. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Annie Moreno and Julien Laurent with us, and I love this first question. Is Haaland better than Mbappe, Jules?
I knew, even if no one had sent that one out, I knew you would have made it up and somehow it would have been on
because
the
show. Because I tweeted you that he was, just to wind you up, and people got very angry at me.
Listen, they are the next, this is the next duel. This is the next Messi v Ronaldo. This is the next, I think, battle for the Ballon d'Or, battle for big titles. I mean, they might end up both playing in the same team, which would be even funnier. But I think they are two incredible talents, so close in age to each other as well. Mbappe is slightly older. And a different profile. It's not me trying to avoid the question.
Yeah.
Because you know that I will always say Kylian Mbappe is better than anyone anyway. But a different profile. I just think the goal that Haaland scored, the first one that he scored today with Dortmund, is exceptional. In what he does at the start of the move, yeah. By the way he dribbles and everything, and then the header. This is a finish that Lewandowski would score, but before that, this is a move that, I don't know, Messi would start or Neymar would start, and yet this is Erling Haaland. And I just think he's sensational, and I think Mbappe on his day is sensational as well. At the moment, he's going through a rough patch, but, you know, my heart only has eyes for Kylian anyway.
Who would you prefer to be Venezuelan, Ali? Haaland or Mbappe?
You know, man, sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes you ask poignant questions and relevant questions. I would say I'm going to take Kylian Mbappe.
Oh yes, Ali, I knew I could trust you.
I think there's a flexibility to him in which where I can play him that, well, in Venezuela, he can play wherever he wants, to be honest with you. Kylian, you do whatever you want. We'll give you the vote. You sort it out.
Haaland's special, though, isn't he, Ali? Today, like in that second half, he just thought, right, okay, enough of this. I'm going to have to step up here. And he just did everything.
No, he is special. And the scary part is, and Julien, you alluded to there, is that Mbappe is older than Haaland.
Yes.
The fact that Haaland is... He's a kid, and the ceiling, the potential for him, it's out of this world. And we continue to say, I don't know, striker, but in some of the things that he does, and yes, he is a superior talent when it comes to being an out and out striker, but some of the hold up play and some of the movements that he seems to be adding to his game on a weekly basis, there's more to his game than just being a striker. I really think that when you watch Erling Haaland play, you are watching a new generation on how to play the position.
Jules, are you jumping on the Koeman train yet?
Nah, come on. I need more than that. You need to try to charm me with more than just two good performances or two, you know. Yeah, Yeah, good. They were good games. The last two games were good. And we've said we gave them credit, and we gave Koeman a bit of credit, saying that they were going into the right direction. There was, you know, there was good step towards what they can do. But come on, I'm not that easy. I'm not that easy to, you know, to please or anything. I need a bit more from Ronald.
If Neymar was driving that train, you'd be right on it.
I'd be the co-pilot.
Yes. Wait for me. Wait. Now,
Ali, next question. I know you don't have a lot of experience in this, but just try and delve into the little that you do have. How can a goal trout affect your game as a striker? And which has more power to impact your performances in front of goal? What the fans are saying, what is written by journos, or what is going through your own mind?
Oh, man, I have plenty of experience in this. It is without a doubt what's going on through your own mind. What the fans may be saying or whatever reaction you're getting in the stands, you sort of come to expect that. And as difficult as that may be, it is far more difficult to deal with what's going on between your ears and in your head and in your heart and in your soul. Because as a striker, when you're not scoring goals, you feel like you're not doing your job. And then the goal gets smaller. It feels like every time you hit a ball cleanly, it bounces over somebody and goes out of bounds. That whenever you make a run, the pass goes somewhere else instead of going to where you think it should go. Everything becomes so difficult. And what's even worse is that once it gets in your head, not only does it affect your ability to score goals, but it starts affecting the way you're playing the game and other areas of the game, which then makes it a bigger struggle for you and for the rest of the team.
How would Mrs. Moreno describe how it affects your mood at home?
No different than just a Wednesday afternoon, Dan. I'm just ill-tempered regardless.
Just grumpy all the time. But you wouldn't be extra grumpy if you're going for a goal drought.
No, well, and I can only speak from my own experience. It is frustration, and yes, temper can flare up rather quickly. But as I said before, and as we have established over the years, my temper flares up regardless. So I don't know if there is a substantial difference between a goal drought temper and then just, you know what, something just annoyed me around the house and I was making sure that I pointed that out.
What has annoyed you recently around the house, Harley, that you had to point out?
I can't, Dan. I can't do it.
Come on.
I can't do it. I'll give you a quick example. You know, because I'm a giving sort of guy. So I asked what she wanted for Christmas.
Right.
And okay, she gave me a list. It was a thorough list.
Right.
No problem. If you give me a list, I'm gonna get everything that's on the list, and that's it. That's the way I operate. Days soon after Christmas, I see her sporting a couple of pairs of boots and new shoes and things that were clearly not on the list. And so I said, "Well, if you wanted those, you should have put them on the list." And she goes, "Well, I didn't want to seem greedy." And I thought to myself, "Well, you went and got them anyway."
Oh, the Moreno household. What was top of her list, Ali? What was the top present that she got? Frame picture of
that,
you?
That she wanted?
Yes, that she wanted.
She wanted a one of those the longer jackets that go like past your knees.
Oh, like Stevie's got, like the funeral jacket.
Well, yes, a little bit cheerier than that, but yes, that's a concept. And mind you, those are not cheap.
No.
But hey, and the boots don't look cheap either.
I think Stevie's was. Jules, after seeing Barca's performance in 2021, they start the year well, of course. Do you think Barca will beat PSG, or are PSG still favourites? Imagine if Ronald Koeman's Barcelona knock out Pochettino's PSG, Jules.
Oh, man.
Oh my God. I know I would have a tough time on the show, that's for sure, with you and Ali and everybody else. I still think PSG are slightly favourite, but Pochettino doesn't have much time to put in place what he wanted. We saw again today a bit more improvement, or at least more of what he wants to do in terms of counter press, especially in terms of movement as well. So that's good. But he won't have much time between now and the first leg, which is mid-February. So by then, Barca, as we said, going into the right direction, which could be stronger than what they are now even. I think that should be a very good game. Let's just hope for PSG that they get all the players injured back, because Ganagay got injured again tonight. Thilo Kehrer got COVID this morning. So that's two more. It's true.
That's it.
What are you moaning about?
Poor,
it's true. So
PSG.
Pochettino needs as strong as a team as possible, especially if Barca have everybody available. It would be unfair otherwise.
Do you think Pedri is better than Ricky Puig, Ali?
I like them both. I like them a lot. I've been a big fan of Ricky Puig. I don't know why he's not playing more often and getting more playing time. But Pedri over the last few weeks has begun to show a different level that brings him into the attacking half, and not only a possession guy, but a guy that can actually find that final pass, combined with Lionel Messi, thrive in that position. Not easy to do. Others have failed. He seems to be doing very well at it. I'm going to take Pedri, Jules, but I love me some Ricky Puig.
You love Pedri more, don't you, Jules?
I like Pedri more. I agree with Ali, though, on Ricky Puig. I mean, Koeman after the game today said, oh, stop talking about Ricky Puig all the time. You know, there's other young players like Conrad and like Mateus, who they're not playing, and you're not asking me about them. Yeah, but Ricky Puig is a first-team player. He did well last season. It's not like Conrad or like Mateus or even like Junior Firpo. This is a different, you know, this is someone who could easily play far more than what he does right now. So I think the questions are legit in many respects. But I think Pedri has something very special that I'm not sure Ricky has, although Ricky is a very good player.
Final question. I think it's an obvious answer, Jules. If Chelsea could choose one player to leave the squad during the January transfer window, other than Kepa, who would it be?
Oh, they've got plenty. Plenty. They would open the door for them. They would drive them anywhere they want in Europe. Even in MLS, they could fly them over if they wanted.
Well, who's the top of the list,
Alonso,
then?
I mean, Marcos Alonso, Tomori, probably Emerson as well. Maybe even Rudiger want out. And that it's not just that they want them out. They need to sell them. They need to get rid of them. Need to get rid of their wages. Ideally, get some money for them, and then they can maybe, you know, reinvest that money. But yeah, there's plenty, not just one.
That's it, boys. Thank you very much. ESPN FC back on your screen tomorrow. More FA Cup action. Juventus playing as well. Be sure to join us on the next show. We'll be looking back at those games and more.